Sepsis, or the infection causing sepsis, starts before a patient goes to the hospital in nearly 87% of cases. Sepsis is a medical emergency. If you or your loved one has an infection that's not getting better or is getting worse, act fast. Get medical care immediately. Ask your healthcare professional, could this infection be leading to sepsis? And if you should go to the emergency room. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Yes or no? Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
I had no prior knowledge of the planned assault on Nancy Kerrigan.
I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
Hey everybody, it's Oops the Podcast. I'm Francis. He's
Giulio Gallerati.
And we are joined today by the fantastic Tom Takkar. Tom, thanks for being
here. What up, boys? Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here, man.
It's great. Yeah. Tom is a comedian. He has a fantastic podcast about music.
That's right. Stand by your band.
Stand by your band.
We have comics come on and talk about music they like that people give them shit for liking. Like,
that's good.
What do we do? Coldplay or like Baha Man or whatever.
Nobody's done Baha Man. You know what another good one though would be that I thought of recently?
What's that?
Savage Garden.
Oh, that's I would love to do a Savage Garden episode.
I love Savage Garden.
Come do Savage Garden.
Yeah. There we go, folks. This is how it works.
It's done. If you want to get booked,
I did that on purpose.
This is how it happens. So I can leave now.
Do people ever pick a band that isn't that cringy that like people like?
That just fucking happened to me on the way here because we're doing a live tour of it. It's a great way to get my plugs in.
Yeah, right up top.
We're doing a tour in Cincinnati, Indiana, and Chicago over the Thanksgiving holiday next week. And this guy sent me, we have people battle each other for it. It's like roast battle-y, but you pick a band and then they make fun of each other. Like,
oh, cool.
Like Black Eyed Peas or whatever. This motherfucker sent me Fleetwood Mac. I was like, nobody hates Fleetwood Mac. Then I was like, Andrew, you're a fucking idiot. And then he goes, oh, my bad. What about George Harrison? I was like, you're going to send me a Beatle? No, that's like the exact opposite of this fucking show. Yeah, I want to defend Mozart. Fuck off. Yeah. Like, how are you? I'm so mad.
Dude, that's funny,
I got to do this for fucking 24 people and go back and forth. And they're like, what about Beyonce? I'm like, we would get skinned alive.
Yeah.
Like, if we even posited that she needed to be defended, we'd be killed.
Well, Tom, first of all, you have an amazing last name.
Yes.
Which I have to imagine has befuddled many a comedy host who have brought you on stage.
This is the problem that I run into. Absolutely. And people who I'm like, oh, I thought we were like super good friends. And then the other night, this dude brought me up at the cellar as Tom Takkar. And I was like, where did you create an inn?
How did you
come up with, you magically invented an inn? Like, I get Thacker, which that's how some people just pronounce
it. So his last name, if you're not reading it, is spelled T-H-A-K-K-A-R. Right.
So this is where it gets a little dicey. It's my father's last name, but it's not my legal. My name is Tom Brady.
Right.
So
I knew that.
So it was a brutal situation. I was getting booed at comedy.
You grew up in Indianapolis.
I grew up in Bloomington, Indiana, which is like 50 miles south of Indianapolis.
Well, that's crazy.
But I would do shows in Indianapolis, and people would legit boo me. And I tell a story on my Conan about this guy who intro'd me. It was like a rap show. It was like a rap and comedy show, which already bad.
Yeah.
but this guy brought me up by being like, he didn't know who I was. And he just saw my name on a list. And he was like, oh my fucking God. Y'all ain't going to believe what's about to happen. And then he was like, we all fucking hate the Patriots, right? And everybody was like, yeah. And then he goes, who was the, he said this, I swear. They wouldn't let me say this on Conan. But he goes, who is the gayest motherfucker you could think of who plays for the Patriots? And everybody went, Tom Brady! And then he just goes, yeah, here he is! And then I just had to go on stage. And that should have been when I changed it, but I kept it for another 5 years or whatever.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Yeah.
But so I changed it to my father. What made the most sense to me is I am half Indian, and I was like, Tom Brady is by far the whitest name you can have, I'd say. But also, I was like, well, my name would be Tom Takkar if my father wasn't a piece of shit. So, or if he was like in my life at all, you know.
So this opens a can of worms, which you know, we will allow you or not, however much you feel like you'd like to talk about, but you do talk on your, in your act a lot about your relationship with your father. And it, you know, it, with comedy, outsiders, it's always hard to know where the line of reality meets the line of act. And with you, I get the sense that there's not a whole lot of insincerity or exaggeration.
No, and it gets me in trouble a little bit with, like, not, this is a little different, but I talk about my stepdad in my act, and I,
you don't like him,
literally
either.
Said on a Comedy Central thing that I didn't think anybody would see that I wanted him to kill himself, and then which is, and my, I love the bit, I would, but I didn't think there was any world where he would see that, and then his mom shared it. I was like, I don't think he watched this, you know? But yeah, then I had to fucking see him at the holidays or whatever.
Well, tell us about that. Did he bring it up?
He didn't bring it up, but it was weird.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, he's fine. And I was like, why didn't you warn me that he was going to be here? Yeah. Yeah, pretty kooky. But no, the stuff about my father is like, the stuff about my father is like totally, like when I started doing that material, it was bombing because it was like too raw and too... People were like, wait, are you kidding or not? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I still run it. When I say I want my stepdad to kill himself on stage, people are like, and then I'm like, I don't, you don't know him at all. You're fine.
But it's amazing how much more palatable stepdad is in for, as far as suicide wishes than father, right?
Right. But I think I was able, I think I was able to get past people being weird about the dad stuff by just continuously shitting on him to where, I think if you seem like you're fine, people start to go along with you, and you're confident in the material.
Yeah.
Because at first I was kind of doing it like, is this okay? Are you guys okay? And then people are like, why don't you seem comfortable talking about this?
But that's a great point. Yeah. If you're asking for forgiveness with your joke, you're not going to win.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Guys, if you're thinking about starting a podcast, fill in the blanks here. If I were in a concert right now, and I said, if you're thinking about starting a podcast, I'd then turn the microphone to all of you sitting in the stadium, and you would all yell, Anchor, Anchor. And then you'd say, go to anchor.fm to download the software where you could host your very own podcast, see all the best analytics. You could see it in a way that was really user-friendly and nice and not too technical and industry jargony. It's a way that any person can look at it and be like, ooh, that's pretty. And also it's our podcast. And you, there's no minimum listenership required to advertise and monetize. So you can immediately have ads when you hit the ground running. It's really exciting, really spectacular. If you want to start your very own podcast, anchor.fm, download it now.
So here's a question. Who do you hate more, your father or your stepfather?
Definitely my stepfather.
Really? Yeah,
because he's the evil I know. Where it's like, my father gets to be a mystery to me a little bit. Where it's like, I know who he was, and he kind of fucked me over a little bit. But he's dead, too, so I don't really care.
When did he die?
He died about 5 years ago. It was fucking crazy, actually. So I was his only living heir. I found out through like a lawyer or something, and then, or my uncle is a lawyer, and he found out that I didn't know he died right away. It took like 3 months for me to find out he died because his estate, his accountant, and his he had like a lawyer who became the executors of his estate. Because they said they didn't know I existed. So then he was like, he had been a doctor at one point, and like, he kind of fucked us on child. He didn't give me any child support until we sued him when I was 18 and got like $15,000 from him or something.
Nice.
Yeah. It was like one of those things where it wasn't nearly what it was supposed to be. And he hid all of his money, in cash in his house. And so these,
Jesus, dude.
Yeah. His life kind of went to shit. He lost his medical license, and he owned a curtains business and a Meineke in Georgia.
Whoa.
And he had this like mansion, or not mansion. It was like a 3-story house though in Georgia that was really nice.
Like where in Georgia?
In Marietta.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like right outside of Atlanta. It was a place that was right outside of Atlanta.
I know another half Indian guy from Marietta also.
Oh shit, I might have a brother.
named Hans.
Oh fuck, you know Hans? Him, dude.
Hans Brady.
So we find out whatever my uncle calls me. He goes, look, we've done the math here on what he has. We saw the property breakdown. you're probably going to get like $200,000. And at the time I was like a 24-year-old living in Bloomington, Indiana, working like a hospital job, like making $11 an hour or whatever. And I was like, holy shit. He was like, you're going to have to move to Georgia and run a Meineke. So you have to learn how to do that. And I was like, I'm in. I was already a comic. And I was like, we're moving all these people. I'm going to move my buddies to Georgia. We're going to live in this house. They'll pay the bills, or they'll pay, like, we won't have rent. We'll have like a mortgage or whatever. And we'll run this Meineke. It was going to be a sitcom. It was going to be a great situation.
Yeah.
And then it slowly gets revealed that this accountant and lawyer, they lied about not knowing who I was because they wanted to become the executives of the state. They milked all the money. They took over the Meineke, closed it within a month because they were like, we can make more money if we just get rid of this. They sold, he had two Porsches, and they sold them to themselves for like $500. It was fucking insane. And then there was, if anything, I would have owed, I lost like $2,000 in this instead of getting anything.
How is that possible?
I don't know. We went to court with them, but like the judge had a relationship with them, and he was like, you know, if what you're saying is true, none of it's like on paper, so there's not really anything that can be done. Because so one of his Meineke employees was like a good friend of his, and he goes, I know for a fact there's $100,000 in cash in that house. And the accountant was like, you were right, there's cash in there. And then the next week they were like, hey, the guy who knew my dad was like, hey, what happened with that cash? And they were like, what cash? They just pocketed it.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was like a fucking crazy, crazy stitch.
Damn.
That sucks.
Had your,
yeah.
Had your dad.
No, it's fine. It's
written any clauses there was
no
into will. The
will
for
no.
you? Oh.
No, there was no will. So it was like, it was just by law that I would have gotten this stuff if they had contacted me when he died instead of waiting 3 months so that they could become executives.
So why did they tell you you're going to have $200,000?
They didn't tell me that. My uncle did, who was like the,
he didn't know he was representing.
He didn't see what they had done. Yeah. And when he started to figure it out, he was like, yeah, this might be a dead end now. And my uncle is like, he was aggressive about it and like screaming in a courtroom and shit. And it's like, we finally were like, let's just fucking get out of here. And we just went back to Indiana. We've spent like a week in Georgia trying to do this. And it was not a pleasant time in my life.
No, man. No.
That's rough.
Wow.
Sorry, I feel like I really brought this thing
dude,
down.
Dude, this is what we're about. We've had guests cry before.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to do that. Who was the bitch who cried in here? Yeah.
Wendy Starling.
Is her name. I'm sorry. I love Wendy.
Yeah, she's great.
She's not a bitch. I thought it was a guy. It's only okay to call guys bitches. I'm sorry. Who was the queen who cried in here?
Who's the strong, independent woman who dared to show her true
who
self?
Who was the bravest person you've had on this show?
Who's my hero? Yeah. Too good. Wow.
That's wild.
So interesting. I mean, you know, I said this to Monroe Martin, but because he had an unbelievable.
No, I know. Upbringing. Monroe has, me and him have talked about this because I saw him do a set. He has one of the funniest stories of all time that's so sad about his dad after he got a little success, looking him up and going to lunch with him and his friends. And then he brought a date to the lunch and then bailed before the bill came. I don't want to give his stories away, but like Jesus. Monroe has, I saw his story and I was like, we should be friends, man, because that it sounds so similar to my shit.
Exactly. So my point in all of this is that you can't imagine how hard it is to write comedy coming from a perfect life. Like I've had.
You know
what an advantage.
It's true. You are the true victim.
What an advantage you and Monroe have. My father
get
was
out of comedy, Francis,
there.
You hot piece of shit.
I should go give him a hug.
Yeah, Francis was recently given a Mac Pro by a friend.
That had nothing to do with my father.
This goes into, it just adds on, baby. Tack it on.
Well, I guess in a way it did because it was a connection from my golf course, which, you know, dad is helping with. So.
Jesus
but,
Christ.
No, but, you know, I those are all in any of that.
Yeah.
No, obviously, I don't think you're at fault for any of that. But this is a podcast about mistakes.
Yes. Yeah. Was that there doesn't anything... even count as stuff that I would consider a mistake.
Good.
I didn't even do anything. Yeah.
Right.
We just talked about that because my dad's stuff. No, my dad's stuff is all just like backstory, I think. But I've fucked up most of my life, and I regret it all.
Well, dude, actually, he is a mistake. You are the mistake.
I'm a mistake.
In that situation.
That's true.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm for sure an accident.
How so?
Oh, well, you mean
his father's would consider him a mistake.
But yeah, we still haven't heard what happened with your dad. Why?
Oh, him and my mom like went out a few times, and I don't know. It's one of those things that I think your mom doesn't tell you details about right. stuff like this, but I've kind of pieced together that it was not a thing where they were ever going to be married. And I think she got pregnant and was like, yeah, I'm keeping it, you know, and I'm it in that situation. And then he was like, I think she claims he tried to take me back. She was trying to steal me and take me back to India, but I don't know. I don't know what the reality is.
Did he go back and forth between India and America a lot?
I believe so. I didn't have a relationship with him. I think around like one or two, he was like out.
Got it.
Yeah. Hmm. Pretty kooky.
Wow. But yeah. All right. Well,
let's move on.
Yeah, absolutely. So in life now.
Yes.
In comedy, how you've been doing comedy for, when did you start?
I've been doing it for basically like 10 years.
Nice.
Because I did it like once or twice in college. But then there was nowhere to really do it until a comedy club opened in my hometown, the Comedy Attic in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana.
Nice.
So I started basically when I was like 21. I'm 31 now.
Gotcha. Yeah. Cool. And along the way, when did you move to New York?
I moved to New York 4 years ago because we're already getting into the mistakes. So, I did the comedy festival Just for Laughs in Canada. And right then, I was living in Chicago at the time, and this agent called me before I went to Montreal. He was, I know you got Montreal. Do you want me to be your agent? It was like a guy with CAA, and he was like, I was like blown away because, you know, I had never talked to the industry other than like Montreal people. And I was like, oh, shit, I already have an agent. This is great. He was like, you're in New York. Don't worry. You'll be in every club except for the Cellar. We don't have power there. But we'll get you acting stuff, packets. He had seen me at a fest. He had just seen me at Limestone Comedy Festival do an hour, and he was like, "We need a guy like you who can do an hour on the road. This is great." He promised me the fucking world, and he was like, "As soon as you get off stage, we're signing the papers." And I was like, "I'm all in."
Yeah.
And I go to Montreal. I have a fine set. It was like not horrible, but it wasn't like the set of the night. And the dude, he kept being like, "It's a done deal. It's a done deal." And he was like, you got to move to New York like immediately, though. And so I leave Montreal. I'm feeling weird, but I move to New York. We haven't signed anything. He goes, as soon as you get to New York, hit me up and we'll get it done. I moved to New York. I don't hear from the guy.
Oh, my God, dude.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I moved here just starting over and fucking had nothing. Holy and I shit. Lived in a fucking basement that flooded once a month. Ugh. And it was just brutal. But I was like, I had a tough time where I was like telling people, which I shouldn't have done. I was like, yeah, I'm all set in New York. Yeah, but it's like one of those things where you're like, what a dumbass. And if I was hearing me talk, I would have been like, man, fuck you. You don't know what New York is going to be like.
Well, you know, at what point in your life will you stop putting your trust in the hands of men and realize you should be a lesbian? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy how it was my first lesson that this industry will just fucking eat you up and not give it. There was like, I met him again like 2 years later at Skankfest, and he was like, hey, man. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, I thought I had more power than I did. Or so. He like left that agency, but I was like, that's fine, but don't act like you fucked me. I was like, he was telling everybody at Montreal that I was signed too. Like every agent
so
was
no
coming.
One else would talk to you?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know if that necessarily was the reason, but like, people were coming up and congratulating me. So I was like, shit. But I moved to New York thinking like, oh, I'm in. It's all good for me. And then, of course, I was like at an open mic going last like the next night.
Dude, right. I wonder like if that you probably didn't even realize at the time because like you said, you had no contact with the industry.
Yeah.
You probably didn't even realize how crazy that fact that he hit you up like that was.
I know, this
is crazy, but maybe you just I've never heard of that happening. And like CAA, like
it happens.
That's unfucking.
I'm not the only one that it's like basically hip pocketing where it's somebody being like, oh, I'll give you packets and shit, but we're not signing you until you get something.
Yeah. Oh, right.
But he didn't even do that. He was like, he really pissed me off with like, I eventually got a hold of him and I sent him a tape and he instead of, I was like, I think this would be good for Conan or something. And instead he just gave me a tag that sucked. And I was like, you're not a comic.
Oh,
you suck.
God,
it was shit. And it was like the opposite of my joke. I was like, no, what you're saying is exactly what I'm trying to avoid. It pissed me off so much.
Those moments are so hard, and it's hard to have clarity in the moment. And you look back on it 6 months later, you're like, why the fuck did I even entertain that?
I know.
It happens all the time, dude.
Well, dude, it was just like, it felt so much like the dad estate shit where I was like, I'm in the money. I don't have to worry about shit. I'm going to be an Atlanta comic who's got, you know, 200 grand in a house.
Yeah.
And then it all goes away immediately. And that's exactly how this felt, where I was like, I'm moving to New York. I'm set. I'm going to do all the clubs. I'm going to be like doing late night soon. I'm probably going to have a special. And then it all evaporated. And I'm like, I make, I'm spending $800 to live with five people. And and also I have no shows for a month or whatever, you know.
It is amazing how much the bubble of New York comedy, and I guess comedy in general, is built up on false promises. You know, I say that though, and it's funny because I think about like late night sets, like Fallon. So Jimmy Fallon is a member of my golf course, and a caddy there once told me that he brought a guest out. A guest came out, and it was a comedian, and Jimmy was playing on a adjacent hole.
Yeah,
and that he went over and said hi to him, and somehow they like hit it off just in that tiny exchange.
Yeah,
and Jimmy then told Michael Cox to book this comedian, not having seen his set. Who knows if it's true or not?
I gotta find the set. We'll talk about it all.
Yeah, who knows if it's true or not? But I always thought, you know, my life has been built on those kinds of wins.
Yeah, you know? That's hilarious.
Nepotism.
Not for nothing. It recalls the college athletic recruitment process, and I don't remember what yours was like, but for me, there were a lot of schools that recruited me for lacrosse, and we would hear similar things.
Yeah,
where the coaches would be known to recruit a guy and say, we got our spot for you, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then right the day of like applications due, they would just be like, sorry, buddy, you know, we chose someone else instead. Uh-huh. So you have to really be wary of making sure you didn't commit yourself to a school. Also, some schools' coaches would over recruit so that other schools wouldn't be able to have that kid. And then that kid, you know, they'd get their fourth goalie and they'd be like, yeah, well, we really want you. You'll start next year. But meanwhile, they had brought in three other goalies and that kid just never plays.
Right.
So,
no, that's interesting though. That golf course thing, I got to know. That's actually how I got Conan though, is that I was on one of Epstein's islands and me and I was in adjacent rooms to Conan and I ran into him going to the bathroom.
I didn't know Conan did that.
Oh, I don't know. I don't want to implicate him, but I don't know what I was doing there.
Well, you said he was there, so your words.
You did,
your words.
No.
I think in the end though, right, that situation is a great example of what we like to call fucking upwards.
Sure.
Because coming, you know, with your CAA promise and the agent and all that, it galvanized you to New York City.
It's true. It's like I ended up here anyway, but it is one of those things where I definitely don't have it in me where I'm like, well, it all worked out. I'm like, no, fuck that guy. That sucked.
Yeah.
But I also, I'm pretty good at just forgetting shit pretty quick. Like, it made for a bad year of my life. Like, I had a pretty bad depression because it, and this happens to a lot of people who do that festival, especially Unrep New Faces, because when you're an unrepresented comedian, you're like, when you go out there, you're like, this is everything. Like, this is the only shot I'll ever have. And if you don't come away with it, a star, and most people don't, you're like, oh, I guess I ruined my chance. I blew it. Like, I came here being like, I fucked it up, and I have to, like, make a new opportunity. Even though when I look at the stakes that were on the line, everything worked out. It was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything I wanted to get from it, I did.
Right.
It's just that I thought they put in your head, you're going to be you could become a celebrity after this.
Yeah. And that used to be the case.
Yeah,
at
it's just
JFL,
a different thing.
I think a decade, it's 20 years ago.
The internet has changed all this shit where there's tape on everybody now. Nobody's getting discovered at this thing anymore. Like, I mean, I think people can get opportunities from it, but there's so much tape on everybody now that you can kind of just get things from posting your clips or whatever. Like, you can really create your own festival, you know?
Right.
For people who don't know, who are listening, Montreal Comedy Festival is sort of like the pinnacle of like a comedy festival where you go and in theory you at one point could get discovered, and you still can, but the point that we're making is that like it's not that black and white. You don't just show up and leave Chris Rock.
Yeah.
They said that 20 years ago you'd go, if you got JFL New Just for Laughs New Faces, that you'd walk out with a six-figure TV deal.
Yeah.
And
that's
it's
crazy.
it's just not like that anymore. Some people do, and it's a, don't get me wrong, it's a fucking great festival. I went back this year as Not a New Face, and it was incredible. It's a, like the pressure's off. I mean, there's still pressure, but you can kind of just have fun. It's nice. But anyway, I'm good at like, I think I'm pretty good at just like letting that stuff fall off over time though. But it's easier when things are going better, you know?
Yeah.
But the fuck up I want to get to before we get too deep into this is, so I started comedy in Indiana, and I was in college, and there was an intern like program at Jimmy Kimmel through my college. Like basically if you wanted to intern, I had a relationship with the person who booked the interns. I had like a connection, and they were like, I was going to go to LA and become, this was my big plan, is I was like, I'm going to go to LA, try to become a comedic writer or whatever. And I have this arranged a little bit. And then my girlfriend at the time, who was like my first serious girlfriend, and she was like, I was like, this girl's way out of my league. I can't believe I've even tricked this lady into today. I was like a fat kid. I mean, I'm still not, you know, hot like you boys, but I'm like, but like, I was like a real, like a pudgy boy or whatever. And like, I felt like, I was like, I can't believe, like I had lost a bunch of weight and I was like getting confidence. I was starting to do comedy, and I got this girl who was like a prom queen to date me or whatever. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. And then, she moved to Ohio to go to med school, and I was going to go to LA, and I was like, yeah, I guess that's just what it is. And then she was like, why don't you move to Ohio instead of LA? And I said, okay. I was just like, yeah, if this lady wants me to do that, this is my one chance at love in my life, I guess. So I got to do it. So I turned down the thing. I moved to Ohio. I get engaged. And
how old are you?
I was 22 at this point.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it was not my... And she, it was the thing where she kind of pressured me into it, but then she kind of... It hit her how young we were, and she was like, eh, maybe this is stupid. Mm-hmm. And then she started into med school, and there's, you know, all these hot guys there who are going to be doctors. And sure enough, one of them, you know, got in there. And
while you were engaged?
This is where it gets dicey. I believe that to be true. And we broke off the engagement and stayed together. And it was, again, just, I've had a few years in my life where just a whole year I was sad. Like, I moved to Ohio. We're engaged for a little bit. We break off the engagement. She wants to stay together, though. And I was just like, I've fucked my life up. I was like, I've ruined my life at
22. You knew right away?
I was like, there's something. As soon as I got there, it was weird.
Where in Ohio?
Athens, Ohio. And it was like a thing where there's not really a comedy. There was a small comedy. Actually, there's a weird amount of great comics from there. Like the kid Luke Knoll, who did SNL, was from there. He went to school there. Eudora Peterson's from there. Patty Harrison. There's like all these
what
comics.
School is this?
It's Ohio University.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Did you push for the proposal, or did she push?
It was
to
a
propose?
Weird mix where it was she hinted at it. We went to like an Olive Garden once. This is fancy in Indiana. We went to an Olive Garden, and she thought I was gonna propose then. And she seemed kind of bummed out that I didn't.
Oh, my God.
And then my mom was like, you have to get engaged to this girl. Like, you, or else she's going to leave. And so me and my mom bought a ring together. And then she, like, was really surprised by it then. And I think what happened is she just started med school and was like, oh, what am I doing? Like, I'm going to be a doctor. I have a real resentment against doctors because of this.
Absolutely.
They're so fucking pretentious, and they think they're better than ever. I worked in a hospital for 8 years, and I worked directly with doctors all the time.
And your fucking dirtbag dad was a doctor.
Yes, exactly. So they have a lot of, you're right. Maybe it's ingrained in me that I'm like, yeah. But I have a lot of resentment towards doctors, where I do feel like they have this God complex where they think that at some point you're like, this is a job, man. It's just a job. Like, I was also, before I started comedy, that's what I was going to do. I went to college with the goal of going to med school also. And then I just got more and more into comedy. And then I was like, maybe I'll be a nurse and be a comedian. And then even that, like, I had a buddy who was like, you're never going to have time for both. Comedy is a full-time job when you're doing it right. Mm-hmm. Or you can work a shitty job where you don't have to be focused on it or whatever. But you can't have, like, a really, really serious job and do this the way you want to.
You can't have a job that tires you out during the day.
Exactly. I agree with that.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to have a job where you can kind of fuck off and you can, like...
coast.
Yeah, and, like, I had a job for a while where it's, like, I was on the computer all day. I wrote a bunch of my jokes at that job. And then I would go out at night and run them. And it was great. It was a great situation. But anyway, I have a lot of resentment towards doctors because of all of this. And then... yeah, sure enough, there was a guy who she was, like, in med school with, who she was hanging out with all the time. And I was, like, to her credit, I was 22, first serious girlfriend. I was jealous. Like, I was not my best self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't love who I was back then, but I was also right. So that's where it gets tricky, mm-hmm. because if somebody's like, oh, you're jealous and it's gross, you're like... yeah, but she's married to that man right now.
Yeah.
I'm not exaggerating. Like, dude, they are married there. Right now.
100%. Like,
it affirms your jealousy.
Exactly.
It's going to happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you can either not be jealous about it.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen and it might take a little longer. Yeah. Or you can make her act like it's your fault that it happened.
Exactly.
Like, it was going to happen. Yeah.
It was going to happen no matter what. So the breaking point was one night we went out for like Halloween or something. And I saw her kiss him on the neck, which I was like, that's not a friend. That's a weird thing God. To do. A neck kiss? That's the most... I'd rather her eat his ass than neck kiss? That's too intimate.
I imagine they, in the
I'd
bar.
Be like, I'd be like, maybe she tripped.
Wearing a costume.
There's no gray area with ass eating. You can't be like, babe, it wasn't a big deal with ass eating.
Yeah. That's what it would be better. Yeah, you're like, it's like, you know, one thing led
we're
to
doctors.
Another.
this
was a rectal exam.
Yeah. Oh, man, dude. Seeing your once fiance, now girlfriend, I presume you live together?
Yeah, we live together.
You neck kiss a guy in front of you at a party that she invited you to. Were you already suspicious of that guy?
Yeah.
It is the cards crumbling beneath you.
Yeah.
Oh, so, that is tough.
That fucked
hot?
Me up. Did you say, was that hot?
No, is the guy hot?
Oh, no. That's what pissed me off even more. I was like, this doughy bitch is who you're going to... Again, he's a man. I can say it. I was like, this fucking... I'm busting my ass running like half marathons. This piece of shit is fatter than me. And like, look, nothing. I say that because I hated my fat self. But
do you think it would have been easier to swallow had he been some Dr. McDreamy fellow?
Yes, I do. I think part of me was like, well, because then I was like, well, what am I? I guess I'm a piece of shit if that guy's. But he was just very confident. He was. It's funny. He was like I don't want to get too much into this guy, but I tried to be friends with him because I was like, oh, my girlfriend loves this guy. Maybe he's a good guy. So I bought him beers and stuff one night. I was like, I'm going to get to know this guy. And I could tell, I was like, oh, this guy's an asshole. I know what he's trying to do. Because he was real cold. The way he handled it, I was like, I can see you're trying to like fuck me over, which is whatever. Mm-hmm. It worked out the way it should work out in the end because I am in a great relationship. They're married. I don't actually give a shit anymore. But for a while, I was like real haunted by it. And I moved. I was like, I fucked up my comedy career because I could be in LA already. Instead, I'm in the middle of nowhere in Ohio. And then I moved back to Indiana because I was like, well, I don't know where else to go.
Guys, this has been Oops the Podcast with Tom Takkar. Our episode with him was so interesting to us, and I hope to you guys as well, that we're actually going to release part two of it on Thursday. So we have Tom in both episodes this week, and I promise you the next episode is even juicier than this one. Thanks as always for joining us, and we will see you on Thursday.